Chancellor Thorpe, thank you for being with us.
Sure. Great to be here, Jim.
But Chancellor, we're speaking, I think, to history as much today and its archives as we are to this week's headlines. And it seems to me that over the last few weeks, you seem to be more open to talking for the long run without the burden of having to think about how it's going to affect your coming agenda. So that gives us a real chance to learn today. Do you feel some sense of the pressure of the that agenda, of your having no upcoming agenda at UNC? Do you feel that pressure being released to give you the opportunity to speak more for history and to your successors?
I do, and I think it's for a variety of reasons, but the main one is that now Carol Folt has been named the next chancellor, and I'm really excited about that, and I just wanted to make sure that we had that taken care of. But that's exciting and a great thing for Chapel Hill. And as long as that's there, then yes, I just want to say things that help people understand what's going on and make it easier for her.
It was interesting to me that you're fairly candid and somewhat surprising conversations in last week's sports panel were remarks that your media office did not have. And typically things that the chancellor says are vetted and edited by the media office and advisors. Did you write all of that on your own?
Yes, I did.
And didn't consult with lots of people?
I consulted with a few people, but I knew that these were things that our statements that I was going to have to take responsibility for myself.
Well, let's start with the big picture if we can. Every newsmaker that I've known, including myself when I've been on the other side of the fence, has generally believed that the headlines and the story leads in the mass media regarding their tenures are not accurate or very good. So let me start by asking you to do your own autobiographical headline of your tenure as chancellor. What do you believe the lead story should be?
Well, I think in terms of the accomplishments of the university, there's quantitative measures that are really important, research grants being in the top 10, undergraduate applications up 43%, private giving remaining steady. Those are the quantitative indicators that show that the Carolina is healthy. And then on the internal side, I think that the ability to keep morale up through the financial crisis among the faculty and, you know, even with the really difficult year we've had, still a lot of collegiality and spirit among the faculty. And I think improvement among the employees. The housekeepers paid me a great tribute at the event the other day. Those are battles that haven't been won around here for a long time. And so that means a lot to me. And then the town of Chapel Hill, I think, has a collegial relationship with the university in a way that it hasn't had before. So those are the external and internal positive things. And then, of course, the troubles that we have had related to college sports and the academic issues in African and Afro-American studies and you know, those things are specific to UNC. We're also having conversations about sexual assault, but that is very much a national conversation. And Carolina's been kind of pushed off the national headlines by the schools that are kind of coming up this week. And my guess is next week there'll be some other schools that replace them. So I think it's those things. Great fundamental improvement, stronger community. And, you know, managing some really tough external issues, not perfectly, but the best we could.
Well, if I might suggest then, Chancellor, I think that this would be an indication that you're probably a better administrator than you might be a journalist, because our job is not to find the things that are normal. The University of North Carolina is roaring right along, coming along well. There's a rising tide of good things, but our job, of course, is to report those things that are news, which generally are those things that are aberrational, outside the norm of things. And so, I guess we would start with athletics. I think the biggest long-term story might be out of all of that might be that the university went through this athletics scandal. But that in the course of all of this, you've indicated that that when you arrived as chancellor, you were not prepared to manage college athletics, but that you are now. You had an interesting comment. You said, but the road to enlightenment was not smooth. So perhaps starting with that, could you give us a summary of the comments that you made to that sports panel last week? And I think most importantly out of that is now that you have that enlightenment, how would you manage your athletic problems differently?
Well, I think that one of the things that I'm trying to get out there are just some hard truths that it's easy for me to say now that it was hard for me to say 5 years ago and is hard for a lot of people in my role around the country to say. And one is we have a lot of problems. You know, it was very hard. The narrative here was that this was a place where these kinds of things couldn't happen. We hadn't had an NCAA investigation for 50 years, and a lot of us, me included, would go around saying, yeah, we win all these games and win all these national championships, and we never have any of these problems. Well, that was not a very realistic assessment. If you're going to compete in intercollegiate athletics and do it as well as we have, you can't expect that you're never going to have problems with academic support or compliance or things like that. And we were naive about that, and I think Dick Bedore has said the same thing when we started really bringing a lot of high-profile athletes here. So that's one thing, is just get it out there, which I think we've done, that we have to be vigilant because these things can happen here. I think the second thing is to admit how much time university administrators, even when things are going well, are spending on intercollegiate athletics. It's when things are going well, you don't really want to say to the board or to the public, oh, yeah, I'm spending a quarter or 30% of my time on athletics. And then when you have a problem, you're spending 75% of your time on athletics. Nobody wants that to be the case because these are academic institutions, and we don't want to let some of our stakeholders know that they're being shortchanged in terms of the administrative effort that's going on. So what I'm trying to do is get those two facts out there in the public. And if you and once those things are acknowledged, then I think you have to ask yourself whether it really makes sense to have presidents and chancellors having the kind of role that they have governing college sports, governing the NCAA, governing the conferences, and being this sort of presidential control figure who emerges whenever there's a problem and makes the sort of pronouncements that are going to solve everything. You know, we don't have the time, expertise, and freedom, really, to do that in the way that it should be done. And the Knight Commission, I think they had some very noble ideas. But basically, if you look at what the Knight Commission said, they said, well, don't trust the athletic directors to run sports. Well, what would happen if we had a commission that said, don't trust the dean of medicine to run the hospital? And by the way, don't let the dean of medicine be the one to go to the meetings where they decide the rules of how we're going to do healthcare and academics. Make the chancellor go to those meetings instead. That sounds absolutely absurd. So if you think about that, you know, why would the ADs feel compelled to act honorably if there's this thing out there that says that we can't trust them? So what I'm saying is we need to give the professional sports people more of a role in setting policy and certainly in speaking for college sports. And, you know, we need to start with the idea that they're trustworthy. And I think if we do that, they'll put tougher rules on themselves and have an easier time enforcing them than if we are the ones that force them to have these rules, which we know doesn't work. And I guess the final thing about all of this is that what we have right now is not working. It's not sustainable. And so throwing out every idea that we can come up with about how to improve it is something that needs to happen.
Chancellor, then what happened to the notion of play by the rules, graduate your players, show good sportsmanship, and if you cheat, you get fired?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm I think that,
well, but the athletic director in this particular case, I'm trying to think of how you would have done this differently. When why was it not a simple matter? You have an athletic director. You had a contract with the coach that said that if the school broke the NCAA, if the football program broke the NCAA rules, the coach could be fired for cause, and you were the sole arbiter of determining that. The school acknowledged that we had broken the rules. Why could you simply not have said you didn't have to do anything other than pick up the phone and call Dick Bedore and say, Dick, fire him?
Well, I think that for all the reasons that I said earlier, you know, it was hard to do it that way. I think if something like that happened now, that is how it would go down.
So that's meaning that's what you would do today.
Yeah. And I think Bubba Cunningham, you know, you can get him on, and I think he'd say the same thing. But the again, you got to remember, and I know, you know, you were saying earlier, journalist's job is to comment on the news, and so the learning process that we all went through to get to the point where we are now is one that, you know, didn't come naturally to the University of North Carolina, because again, we were caught up in this idea that that these kinds of things couldn't go wrong here. And so it took us a long time to face up to that. But when I look back on it, as bumpy as it was to be here now with Bubba Cunningham as the athletic director, Larry Fedora as the football coach, and with the strides we've made in the ACC in the last year, which we can also talk about if you want to, then I have to say the recovery plan we had was pretty darn good. And so I'm very pleased with where we are, but the point I'm making is that we need to come up with a way of talking about this and handling this so that the kind of damage that our institution has taken on to get to this point isn't necessary every time these things come around, either here or around the country. And as you look around the country, you see similar situations playing out to the one that played out here.
Well, Chancellor, you've heard this. Your own faculty member, Hodding Carter, was the chair of the Knight Commission working with Bill Friday and Father Hesburgh to put all this together. And here's what he had to say about this yesterday.
He's wrong on almost every count. First, of course, the reason that the recommendations came down, and they were a long time ago, was precisely because everything was being run by athletic directors and being run into the ground in some instances in terms of the integrity of the university. They were largely people who were themselves college presidents and chancellors. Well, and of course, the two who led it were Bill Friday, who knew something about academics, and Father Ted Hesburgh of Notre Dame. Whether or not it has worked as was planned is, of course, a function of whether or not the presidents have the guts and the sense to go forward and run the athletic side the way they try to run the academic side. If they fail, they may wish to blame the system, but they ought to be blaming themselves. Once you drink the Kool-Aid and decide big-time athletics is a proper function for your university, and he has decided that, then it is your responsibility to see to it, as with everything else at the university, that it is run straight.
So that's your faculty member who was the chair of the Knight Commission that instituted these policies to which you would respond.
Well, I didn't expect Hodding Carter or Amy Perko or anybody else in the Knight Commission to agree with my comments. And so it doesn't surprise me that Hodding would say all those things. And again, I think the difference is that the Knight Commission crowd is starting with the hypothesis that somehow we're going to dial all this back. And I don't think the politicians are going to stand for that. I don't think the governing boards are going to stand for that. I don't think it's going to happen. So what I'm saying is we're not going to dial back our ambition to compete and compete effectively. And so if we're not, then let's try to devise a system that provides good support and rights to the players that we can, and that is manageable for the university. And look, I'm leaving to go to Division III to be a provost. So I've done about as much of this as I can. So I get the whole thing that this is exhausting and it should be reined in. But the truth of the matter is that we've been fighting this windmill for a long time. And as Hodding Carter just said, it was a long time ago when the Knight Commission made these recommendations. And we don't have less corruption. We haven't stopped the escalation of money in big-time sports. The rule book's only gotten more complicated. And somebody's got to stand up and say, look, this isn't sustainable, and the prescription that the Knight Commission put on the table wasn't the right one.
Chancellor, you're a scientist, a chemist, where you live in a world of yes-no outcomes. It either works or it doesn't work. So the question would be, you had the authority to fire Butch Davis. Do you believe that if you had fired him, you would have been fired?
Oh.
If you had fired him as soon as you knew that the school had broken the rules, you had the authority, it was in his contract, would you have been fired?
No, I would not have. But it was very hard to sort all that at the time. I mean, it's very easy. I can look around the country and see my colleagues struggling, and it's much easier to know what they should do than it is to know what you should do when you're in the middle of the whole thing.
But that's
the point, Jim, that I'm trying to make, and I really want you to try to think about this part, and that is that the level of interest— Okay, and you're a newsman, all right? So the level of what's out of whack here that we're having trouble dealing with is the level of interest in this. We don't have this kind of interest in the philosophy department. And we don't, you know, the budget, I mean, athletics has a $70 million budget. The university has a $2.5 billion budget and another $2 billion in the hospital. And so what's out of whack here is the amount of interest. And when the amount of interest is distorted in that way, that's what creates all these weird behaviors.
Well, here's what I'm trying to figure out. What you have said is that over the course of these years, you have now learned that you would have done this differently. And I believe that you have now said that you would have fired him earlier. You would have fired him when it was very clear that we had broken the rules. Did I hear that correctly?
No. What I said was I would have wanted to have a system in place where the athletic director and I would have been able to talk the way that Bubba and I talk now, which I don't, which I take the big part of the responsibility for myself, which is to say that if we have a major violation in a program, then that's inexcusable. Now, one of the things that and I know you wanted me to fire Butch Davis at the end of the 2010 season. But there's a major problem that we had there, which we couldn't solve, which was we didn't know at that point what the NCAA was going to conclude about the rules.
But you had agreed that you had already agreed that the violations
had
occurred.
No, we had not. That was not until the spring.
Okay. Well, once you had agreed that the violations had occurred, the school concurred, at that point, what were the impediments to firing him at that point?
Actually, Jim, we didn't respond to the notice of allegations until— I believe until after Coach Davis was fired, or very close to the same time. I'd have to look that up.
So,
but it was late in the spring when we got the notice of allegations, and even later when we prepared our response that said that we were going to basically plead guilty to these things. So that was a very unfortunate piece of timing for us, that the end of the season didn't coincide with when we got the information from the NCAA.
What I'm trying to ferret out in this is you indicate that with enlightenment, you would have done it differently. But my question is, if you had done it differently, how would that not be the assertion of the sort of institutional control that has enabled previous chancellors to be able to assert their policies over incumbent coaches? Paul Hardin, for example, dictated that Dean Smith would have to make his Nike contract public. Dean Smith was furious about that. He had his press conference on a Saturday night, and it cost Paul Hardin lots of currency. He made enemies in the course of that, but he did survive. He did wind up retiring a year earlier than he had earlier intended, because he did make enemies in the course of all that, but he did assert that institutional control.
Well, I'm not going to get into talking about what other chancellors have done, Jim, but I think that the timing of when all of these things transpired made it a lot more challenging than the way that you're making it out to be. And I also think that this situation was much, much more challenging than any that Carolina ever faced before.